Some years ago, Professor Hugh Moorhead of Northeastern Illinois University wrote a book called The Meaning of Life According to Our Greatest Writers and Thinkers. It was based on the responses he received from some of the best-known philosophers, writers, scientists, and so on in the world. He had asked them to send them their answer to this question. What is the meaning of life? Surprisingly, many had no answer. Some offered what they said was their best guess. And a great many said they hoped that Moorhead would write back with the answer. Long before Moorhead wrote his book, the biblical writer known as Ecclesiastes, or the teacher, asked the same question, but in a slightly different way. It's from verse 3 of that opening chapter. What do people gain from all the toil at which they toil under the sun? In other words, does life have meaning? Is there any value to our existence? And most of the rest of the book, then, is a summary of the teacher, or Ecclesiastes' exhaustive exploration of this question. Now, the results of this have been interpreted many different ways. And at the risk of oversimplifying a complex debate, it basically comes down to two differing interpretations, okay? Some interpret the book of Ecclesiastes to be a highly pessimistic book that offers tiny glimmers of hope. The second interprets the book of Ecclesiastes as being a highly pessimistic book that offers even less hope than the first group thinks it does. Okay? So those are the two interpretations, with a little bit of exaggeration in there, okay? So in other words, if you're in the dumps and you're looking to be cheered up, don't read the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, Ecclesiastes has been traditionally attributed to Solomon, but his name is never mentioned within the book. Instead, the author calls himself Koheleth. And then, because of the Greek translation of the Old Testament, that word became Ecclesiastes, and that's what has stuck into the English translation. But it means teacher, or in some cases, preacher. The basic Hebrew term is a speaker that is speaking in front of a gathered group of people. So it's a pretty generic kind of a term, really. The book of Ecclesiastes is one of the books of wisdom, and what I've tried to affirm throughout this series on the wisdom literature is that the purpose of wisdom literature is to help us to make good choices. Now, with some books, this is obvious. Proverbs helps us to make choices that generally lead to success in life. But the goal of Ecclesiastes is less clear. Proverbs asks the question, how should I live? Ecclesiastes asks the more disturbing question, why should I live? The teacher then leads us on a relentless journey that shocks us into seeing life and death according to the assumptions we've made about God, about the world, and about ourselves. Then he warns, he gives a warning that if our beliefs cannot withstand scrutiny, the only honest conclusion is that life is meaningless. All is vanity Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. And the image here is of the morning mist, which dissipates with the heat of the day. No form, no substance, you see. Vanity. Chapter 3, verse 11. Yet God has made everything beautiful for its own time. He has planted eternity in the human heart, but even so, people cannot see the whole scope of God's work from beginning to end. Everyone has a worldview. Everyone in this room has a worldview. You may never have used that terminology. You may not consciously think about it, but you got one. You have one. You have a worldview. You have certain assumptions you've made about what the world is and about what life is about. And you operate, of course, according to those beliefs. Now, in chapters 1 through 3, the teacher, Koheleth, lays the foundation for two different worldviews. And he uses a key phrase for each one. The phrases he uses are under the sun, S-U-N, under the sun, and under heaven, to represent these two different worldviews. Now, under the sun refers to a belief that all of life consists of what we can see and feel right here, right now. There is no God. There is no eternity. Or if there is a God, or if there is eternity, it has no practical impact on this life. Today we would call this secularism. Secularism. The word secular is from the Latin word for world. And as Christians, we are to live out our faith in the world, so we are to be secular. Okay, we are to be secular. We're to live our faith in the world. What changes it is if you add these three little letters, I-S-M. If you add the suffix ism, you give it a whole new meaning. It then becomes an ideology. It becomes a philosophy. And so you have secularism. Secularism is the philosophy that says this world is all there is. Now, under heaven, the other phrase, refers to the belief that the world was created by God and for God. And this also means that each and every human being is made in the image of God. Every human being has value and worth. We have a purposeful origin. We have a purposeful destiny, you see. Now, the teacher tells us that God has placed eternity in our hearts, verse 11. So this gives us the capacity to be aware of something larger than ourselves. However, what it does not do is enable us to completely comprehend God and God's ways. As we mature in heaven, we will increasingly understand the big picture. But in this world, we only know a few things. J.S. Wright used to say, God holds the key to all unknown, but he will not give it to you. Since you do not have the key, you must trust him to open the doors. Now, the teacher, Koheleth, does not spend a lot of time on this second worldview under heaven. But there are enough references in the book to keep it from being completely depressing. There are tiny glimpses of hope. Otherwise, we're just whistling in the dark. The teacher spends most of his time on this under-the-sun worldview. And that's because he's assuming this is the worldview of his primary audience, under the sun. Or today we would say secularism. Now, as a matter of fact, there are many different kinds of worldviews that people have. But one way or another, you can usually boil them down to one of these two. under the sun, or under heaven. If the teacher were right here with us this morning, he might well ask, what is your worldview? And why? And believe me, if you didn't come up with a good enough answer, he's got you. He's going to lead you down a very uncomfortable journey of self-examination. Chapter 7, verse 2. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. For this is the end of everyone, and the living will lay it to heart. The teacher tells us that it's better to spend time in the house of mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, in the house of mourning than in the house of feasting. This is because death comes to us all in many forms. Not only will we die physically, but we experience a kind of death when we lose our loved ones, when our dreams are destroyed, when we're afflicted with a terrible disease, when we lose our job, when we experience broken relationships. Now, most worldviews try to ignore or even reject the fact of suffering and death. Some try to bury it. Some try to bury it in an unbridled pursuit of pleasure. Some, like modern existentialism, by the way, next time you're at a party, you want to impress the people there, throw that phrase out and see what they think. Well, modern existentialism says, you know, okay. But there really is a worldview called existentialism. But what they say, though, it's a brutally honest point of view. If there is no God, existentialism is the only thing that makes sense. Is the only honest view left, if there is no God. And what existentialism is saying is that the goal of life is death. And furthermore, we should embrace that as a kind of psychological suicide. The teacher, Koheleth, faces pain and suffering honestly. He is a citizen of the real world. He burns at the injustices and disappointments of life. He grieves the passing of youth, as well as the universality of death. But he cannot abide a dishonest approach to life that tries to find ultimate meaning in the things of this world and ignores the finality of death. How are you doing so far? How many of you are depressed? Okay. All right, we're working on it. We'll get you there. Now, in order to convince his intended audience of the futility of such an approach, he uses what is called an heuristic style. Heuristic style, E-R-I-S-T-I-C. Heuristic style. He temporarily adopts the very view he's critiquing. And this is probably the main reason why people get so confused when they read this book. Because it seems to contradict what is taught elsewhere in Scripture, and it seems to contradict the very ending of the book. Very confusing. Unless you realize it's a particular style of debate. He's adopting the view he opposes, temporarily, in order to bring its bad ideas to light. He's trying to expose these ideas in order for people to see their inadequacies. All right. Now, so assuming this point of view, assuming this under-the-sun point of view, the teacher then tries to find ways to rise above the meaninglessness of the world. And he tries so many different ways. He looks for the answer in nature, money, sensual pleasures, property, position, intelligence, philosophy, even coming to church, religious observances. Now, granted, some of these are a little better than others, but sooner or later, all of them are going to butt up against the huge rack of frustration that proves their emptiness or their helplessness. The teacher is relentless in this. He's relentless in making us face the final emptiness of life. First of all, because it is the truth about this passing world. And secondly, because there is a bigger truth to live by. Chapter 12, verses 13 through 14. The end of the matter. All has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for that is the whole duty of everyone. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. We need to remember that the purpose of the book of Ecclesiastes is not to promise us that life is going to be so wonderful if only we begin with God, but to warn us that life is without meaning if we begin without God. The teacher does not commend the light as much as he makes the darkness intolerable. If we can understand this, then we can understand his offer of hope. The inescapable conclusion of a worldview that rejects God is that life does not matter. But if there is a God who will one day judge the world, then everything matters. Time by itself merely destroys us. But in the light of eternity, nothing is meaningless. No one is forgotten. The secularist says, right now counts for right now. But the believer says, right now counts forever. Leo Tolstoy wrote War and Peace, widely regarded as one of the greatest novels of all time. But he wrote another book that's not as well known called Confession, in which he describes his search for the meaning of life. He says that as a youth, he rejected Christianity. And as a young adult, he explored alternative meanings for life. So he tried hedonism, an unrestrained pursuit of pleasure. That didn't give him any answers. Then he said, I'm going to achieve fame and fortune. Most people who say that acquire neither fame nor fortune. Most of you know that my dad was a heavyweight prize boxer. He immigrated from Sweden to this country in order to achieve fame and fortune. The fact that you have no idea who I'm talking about means he acquired neither of those titles. But he hung wallpaper really, really well. Thank goodness. But Tolstoy is one of those rare individuals who not only set out for something, he got it. He became famous and exceedingly wealthy. But he still couldn't answer the question, So what? Then he got married. He thought his life's pursuit will be to make the best possible marriage life and family life as he could. And they had 13 children, which he said temporarily distracted him from searching for the meaning of life. I guess you can understand that. So outwardly, this guy looked like he had it all. I mean, successful, wealthy. He should have every possible ingredient that makes for happiness. But he wasn't. He was on the verge of suicide. Because he couldn't resolve this problem. He said to himself, what meaning in my life will not be destroyed by death? Couldn't get past it. And so he turned to his peers, and his peers didn't seem to be asking any important questions. Nobody seemed to be asking the big ones, like, you know, why am I here? Where did I come from? Where am I going? What's life all about? But eventually, in humility, he sought out the presence of more and more of what was then referred to as the peasant people of Russia. And these were people of faith. And they pointed him to Jesus Christ. And so he had come full circle back. Only this time he recognized the reality of Jesus Christ and embraced him as his Lord. And so he said, to know God and to live is the same thing. God is life. Meanwhile, the teacher, Koheleth, reminds us that we do indeed live under heaven, even if we don't always understand what's going on. There is one who does understand. And so Koheleth encourages us to take life each day from the hand of God and enjoy each day from God and for God.